or one arm, and that's where you pull from. And this strap, it's loose enough in case the water takes the boat away, you can throw it off so fast so you don't drown with a boat, with the boat pull you out. And those guys were pulling the skiffs up. When you come to a creek or river, whatever, there's no bridge. You have to walk across the water or swim across, and no other way around. And they always had a cook in a skiff. They had stove there some kind, and that's where the cook cooks. But mostly they eat dry beans and salt pork and jam probably and some syrup. And at nights when they land where they stay for the night, that's where the cook bake bunch of bannocks to do them for next day. That's how they live. But that's a tough life, and they didn't got too much paid. As far as the pilots, it was quite a lot of pilots for each boat. But it's always one head pilot, like at time that Big Stone Chief from Wabascow, he was one of the best pilots. He'll be so many young pilots followed him going down the river. The leader is always the best pilot, but the other pilots there behind follow the leader. And about this steamboat, they float that steamboat down to McMurray from there. That one runs. I don't know if it's still there. That's a long time ago. It could be. I seen some steamboats there. They kept in a zoo there. You can look at them when you go there. And a man, his name was Billy Lodet. That's the one who was a pilot in this steamboat. He was a half-breed. And also he flowed down to that Grand Rapids, down below from Athabasca here, under 200 miles. I seen that rapids. And it was pretty rough, I guess, when they were going down the middle of the rapids. It was pretty rough. And that's why Athabasca, it's Athabasca Landing. You see the Athabasca River and the landing with it. Athabasca Landing. That's what it is. And when they land in Athabasca, they generally stay there 3-4 days, and to load up the skiffs again, there's a lot of freight. And the captain won't do much, he'll just hang around there. And the captains, the pilots from each boat, they hang around there. They're not supposed to be tired or played out because they got to look after them boats going down. As far as going down, they had oars and oaring the boat, and wherever it's swift, they kind of stop it and help the pilot not to get it into trouble. And when they come to that Grand Rapids, they land south side. It's a big island there. See, the rough part is in the middle, the bad part. I seen trees going down the middle there, and by God, them trees are 100 feet long with a root on them. They fell off the river, and I seen that river when it was very high in the spring there. Those trees go down, they don't come out a hell of a long ways below before they come back, so it must be deep there. And the right-hand side, that rapids, the rapids wasn't that bad there. That's where those skiffs going down, but they unload everything on that big long island. That long island must be a hell of a lot more than quarter of a mile. Must be 900 yards or something like that, maybe 1,000. And then they pack everything to down below from there. Was water was calm. Only thing bluer than that there's another rapids there. They call it the Little Rapids. And they pilot that one with the load on. It's too far to pack over there. And everything they send there, even cook stoves when they start to come, they send them there. And the tough guy has to pack that cook stove in that part. I guess he gets a little more money for that. But later I understand they had a truck some kind, and they had some kind of wheeler there, and they push them through that truck to down below, then they can load again. Oh, so it's quite a lot of work there. And a lot of these pilots, a lot of these guys packing there, they were pretty tough guys. I understand two guys packed 500 pounds of flour there one time. See who gets the first prize, and everybody bet so much and took the prize. And some of them guys, when I seen them, were very old. They're all crippled, you know, packed too much, hurt their bones, and crazy. Just trying to show off who's stronger. And later, Chief was still hanging around there, but he was pretty old then. My father-in-law, my wife's, her father, Nerber PC from Baptiste Lake, he's from West Athabasca there, about 15 miles, he was raised there. And then he was a pilot, one of the best pilots there. There's quite a lot of pilots, but there's always one pretty brave enough for the water, understand the water, then he's a head pilot. He was a head pilot there quite a few years towards at the end. And also he boxed. He was a boxer. Any boxer come from Edmonton or wherever, he boxed. In the basement of that hotel in Athabasca, still there, Union Hotel. He beats every boxer come there. Another little guy, he was living in Athabasca. Frank Lafferty's name. His brother still living. He's in the home. Alec Lafferty is still alive. He's must be 96, 97 now. Frank, he was 13 years older than him. Frank, he'll take the little boxers. Beats everyone. And Frank, he don't give up when he fights. They even used to call him Little Bulldog, because when he fights, he fights. He don't give up. He'll win the fight at the end. So Frank told me himself, he said, people used to call me Little Bulldog. He said, I didn't mind, because they figure I'm a good fighter, and I'm proud of that name. And another guy there I used to know lots, David Grombaugh, his brother way younger than him, Peter Grombaugh. Peter was a very nice man. He wasn't a drunker or gambler or anything like that. But Dave Grombaugh, he was a drunker. He drinks lots, you know, whiskey and that big stuff. And their father had a land right where the town is. I don't know if he had the whole quarter. It must be. So Dave sold that land to town, was going to build a town on it for $70,000. And them days, money, there was no money. $70,000 was lots of money. Today it's just like $1 million. And Peter drank this money up and gave a little bit to his brother. He bought lots of things and he drank up. Any big shots come from Edmonton, there's no big shots in Athabasca. The hotel manager, he'll send a man over there to go and get Dave. Dave had always lame leg, you know, one leg was shorter than the other. And he drink with the big shots, he buys all the whiskey, they got their rooms upstairs and drink for a whole week sometimes. And Dave will play poker when he's drunk, and the other people will take money away from him. Finally that hotel, Grand Union Hotel in Athabasca, still there. Dave and old George Hess, I remember seeing George Hess, I was in the hospital, hurt my knee in a sawmill. And I have to be in the hospital a few days, and this George Hess was there, a very old man, was sick, he died not long after. And he's the guy, and Dave bought this hotel, half of the hotel, for $25,000. They paid $12,500 apiece. And they hired one man each. So they play poker. Four nights, Dave lost. 12,500 in 4 nights. I don't think he had too much money after that. And in 41 and 42, even 43, he was still alive. I know Dave pretty well. He still drinks when he gets it, can get it. But he wasn't worth 25 cents. All crippled, sold, couldn't do nothing, can't work. Didn't get an old age pension yet. And he had one hell of a time. He used to talk about it. He was rich one time. But what the hell? If he would use his money someplace for interest or something, he could have been well off till he dies. And he had lots of kids, big family. And my father-in-law, he cleaned up the river, fight everybody who wants to fight down the river, and box in McMurray when there's a boxer there, beat him. But I don't know. I asked him one time, he was telling me, him and one white guy fight in Athabasca from Edmonton. And I said, how much did you make fighting? He said, that time, he said, I got $300. What the hell a guy fight for $300? I guess old Nerbury was so goddamn fast, you know, he can jump 12 feet backwards. That's a hell of a long jump for backwards, and the boxers can't hit him, it was too quick. He was eating good all the time. He was a good hunter, and then he works and trap in the winter and getting lots of fur. But after I had him for father-in-law, he was all crippled too. Couldn't do much. I used to feel sorry for him. He was a good man one time. And that time freight goes to Wabasca, even from Athabasca, because that was the only, the head country there, Athabasca Landing. The road, the freight used to come through Calling Lake and Rock Island, and from Rock Island they had the road across the mountains there, the highest hills in the country. They had one tough time. My father hauled freight there for a guy named was Laudrick. American fella, started a store in Wabasca. He also had pool room. I remember seeing that pool room in 1930, was still there. But it was all, everything was teared down. The guy died kind of early, died on TV, and he died in Wabasca. He was a cowboy. He had all kinds of animals there, I guess. He does a little farming too. Had the team of oxen. And my dad come and get freight once from Athabasca with his oxen. And one of the heavy one was about 2,000 pounds. And the other one about 1,800. And the big one won't pull. But they had another small team behind. So we tie a chain into this big one and get the team pull the steer a little bit. And I got a steer pull like hell, and he brought the freight to top the hill again. And after that, my dad said he always had used to carry a little chain in the front there, driving them. So as the big steer won't work, he just rattled that chain, and boy, he really works. And also, my father was a mailman from Athabasca for 2-3 years, hauling mail to Wabasca. There was no such a road them days to Slave Lake yet. After that, I guess they started to build a road to Slave Lake, and that's where the freight come from, to Wabasca, all of it. It was pretty tough country, that Wabasca. You have to be a good man to take all of it. And there was a lot of good trappers there. We lived there. And finally, one winter, my dad didn't have anything to do. He had no job. Then he trapped. He used to be a good shooter to shoot something, but he never was a moose hunter. And I seen him shooting rats in the spring. He was good on .22. And if he seen a moose, he'll kill him if he had a rifle with him. And my dad caught quite a lot of foxes that winter. There's a lot of foxes. He even caught 2 silver foxes. And he caught a fisher. And there was no fishers them days. There was 2 fishers come to Wabasca. Another guy from Sandy, an old guy, died long time ago. He killed one. My dad killed one. And Link was very good price. And I seen a guy brought, a guy from Athabasca, his name was Sorrow, a French guy, come and bought fur there, and he stayed at our place. He know my dad well. And he was buying fur there. This guy used to call him Coco Sayest, because this Frenchman, he saw a lot of pork, and even brought pig feet, pig's feet. And there was no such a thing, Indians know you can eat pig's feet. All they think about is pig is stepping on everything in the yard, wherever he goes, and they don't like to eat it. But the Indians used to eat moose feet. They clean them and burn all the hair off and boil it, and by God, it was good. I eat it too. But they figure... I guess my father took these steers down the Wabashkal River to the Piri River. Then they plowed there with a breaking plow. This American, he was going to move there and start putting some crops and gardens and stuff like that. And also he was going to build another store there, probably another pool room, same in Wabashkal, so trappers can stop there and enjoy life, and probably would give out some work people to do, clearing land or whatever. And when my father went there breaking land that summer, he had his brother-in-law, my mother, her brother, Clofas de Coyne. Clofas was sick, had flu or something. So they came home, and they only had one saddle horse, or saddle. They had two of these steers, but you can pack them. The big one you can ride, but the little one, you can't ride that one. That was broke. Probably he was taken to stamp rodeos or something like that. Probably they buck him there, and so never learned to break again. And one place they have to cross the river, I know where it is, I've been there. I walk across that Wabashkal River there myself. It's a portage from there to come out on the other side, big point. It's by Bear River, they call it, that's where it is. And my father couldn't catch the big one to ride behind the pack of the steer, but he catch the little one. But the little one when he catch, he start to go to the water already, so my dad jump on him behind the pack, and he hang on the pack, some ropes there, and the damn steer buck like hell till river started getting fairly deep, and then he walks on there. But he was started to blow his nose in already to start to box on. It's dry again. So my dad scared if he keep on riding him to top the hill, and the damn thing he'll buck until he bucks the pack off, and maybe they can't catch him for a while. He scared himself. And so he jump off as soon as it's dry enough so he won't fall in the water. So it was okay. The steer was okay. And they got into Wabashkal. And then his boss was very sick and no time died. So my dad never went to finish that field over there. And after that American fella died, and he had a sister, South Athabasca someplace. Also had a nephew. The guy's name was Harry Teal. And those two moved to Wabashkal. Harry Taylor was there for only a couple of years. I think he wasted all the money, took most money, whatever. His mother hang on there quite a few years, but the old lady finally left Wabashkal and never even sold anything, sold out from whatever was in the store and whatever was in the house, and just left, never come back. So later Sammy Johnson got a hold of that land. He must pay taxes. And Sammy Johnson, he was a ranger, him and his father both. They built houses a bit north from where this American fella had his house, by the bridge. And that's where they built, but they built quite late, way late. Must be around 33, something like that, when they built there. I remember watching that building when it was the building there, and Sammy had one house and his father had one house. And there was always a lot happening in Wabba's house. See, that time now was a lot of lumber there, just plain lumber and singles you can buy from the mission. I think it's around 1924, 1925, something like that. The Catholic mission from Dimmery, they brought a small steamer, very small steamer, and a small sawmill and a planer. Also a machine that you can make singles. That's the only time I seen single machine. And they make everything. They used to cut timber on the south, east and south, the end of the south of Wabascow. That's where they were logging the winter time. I remember I went there quite a few times shooting squirrels. My father worked there too, and they were cutting logs, trees. They picked the best ones there and there. And they only take about three logs out of one tree. They left the tops about 8-inch size up to there they're taking. They only take the big side. They don't take the tops. And they haul these in March, all them logs, land them there, and saw them in the summertime. When they finish saw them, they dry pile the lumber, and they plane it. And you can buy plane lumber there anytime. I think it's around $12 a thousand, something like that, very cheap. And you can buy singles also, and flooring or anything. So everything going on. And when we left 1927 from Wabascow, when we come back 1929, they built a coffin already, a big coffin, three-story high, fairly big building. They had everything in there. They even had a church inside there. The church burned. They tear the church when they built this big building. So they had even church inside there and kids in there. There was a couple of hundred kids, something like that. They had everything. I remember they had a stove there, a big cook stove. Everything was big. When they bake bread, they generally, they make just like a dish, but it's made out of lumber. And that's where they mix their bread. I think they mix 100 loaves right away, and they cook 100 loaves. I don't know how many days that they use in that coffin, quite a few days. And then they bake again. They had pretty well everything. They were off. And they had night watchmen when they had that coffin, because the kids sleep upstairs, third story, because they had suits. In case there's a fire, kids can go in a suit, fire safe, I guess you would call it. I remember watching kids, they train them how to do it. The two big kids come down first, and then the other big kids will be on top there and put these little kids into the suit, so they come down, and the two boys are standing down below there. They're standing both sides, and they grab the kids when they come out there and make them stand, so the other ones keep on coming. They won't pile up there and hurt each other. And they had everything there. Even they had trashing machine, small trashing machine, and even had a tractor there, and they were farming quite a few acres altogether. They farm a little bit everything. They always had lots of oats, and they farm some wheat, and they even farm some barley. They always had their own pigs, and they had chickens, and they were pretty well off. And they raise quite a lot of cattle too, because they kill a cow or steer or whatever for the kids to eat meat. But lots of hunters in the summertime, they'll sell meat to the mission. I remember they sold it for $2, the hind quarter, and the front quarter was $1.50. But the way the Indians cut up a moose, they take just a quarter cut off from the body, and then the hind quarter, same things. So the Indian kill a moose, he can sell the four quarters, and still they'll have all the ribs and all the bones, and that way. And they also had lots of horses, quite a few horses, and they had quite a few teams to make hay with, and use them for trashing and use them for hauling logs. They always had half a dozen teams, and they also send a team to go Chipoyan or come to Calling Lake or Trout Lake, because was always a priest. One priest travels to go to countries and different countries to get more kids, especially they heard somebody lost his wife over there, and or some woman lost her husband, and they'll go and get the kids to look after the kids for her or him, whatever. Those Catholic priests, they help lots, and also the English church, they do the same thing. They help lots. It's surprising, but lots of people didn't believe in they helped them. Lots of people will say, they come and take my kids away from me. Well, they didn't take the kids away from you. Like the end of June, you can go and get your kids and come and live with you 2 months. When it comes time to go to school again, and you can take your kids and put a lot of them in there for 10 months, and they close them, they feed them, they keep them good bed, and learn them school. There's a lot of people learn quite a bit school from there. They can read and write and talk English. But the Catholic school, there was good teachers there. They always had nuns, sisters, they call them. They're friends, and they never had good English. I don't know why they never hired a good English teacher or something like that. Because the French people and Ukrainian people is the same thing, and Indian people is the same thing. We're the same way, Indians. So we talk English with a white man, we'll turn around and talk to our wife in Cree. Well, Ukrainian people, they're the same way. They can't leave their own language, and French people is the same thing. I remember I used to go trash lots in Morinville years ago for French people. Sometimes I used to sit on the table there just like a dummy, and they all talk French, and I don't understand nothing. My mother trying to taught me some French, and I stopped her. I said, I don't want to learn no French. And my God, lots of times I was sorry I didn't, because my mother talks French and understand lots. Nuns was raising her from 3 to 16, 13 years. And in third one, we live in north part of Wabascow, there north of Wabascow. A big plane landed there. The big plane had great big body on it. The wings were small, and the pontoons are big, and probably motor wasn't that big. And they stayed there 2-3 days, paid the treaties off. See, the treaties were getting $5 a year. The counselor used to get $15, and the chief gets $25. It's not much money, but they also talk about something they want. They want good housing or more more ration or things like that. They always had 2-3 days meeting there. And I remember the pilot was good enough to let us kids go in, look at the plane inside. Oh my God, we thought it was really something. And we lived north of Wabascow, there about 3 miles on the lake shore. And when that plane taken off from that point, the point by Hudson Bay there, and there's another big point about 5 miles down there. Plane took off from there, and boy, it was really going. Plane make a heck of a sound. My God, before he couldn't take off till that big point finally took off. Of course, it was pretty calm that day. And that time a police come, the Indian agent, and also a doctor, and also a nurse, and the timekeeper or clerk, whatever he was, and the interpreter, a guy named Charlie from Drift Pile, Charlie Anderson. He used to go with them all over, you know, interpreter. He was a good man, very good interpreter. I suppose Charlie died now quite a few years ago. And there was a lot of things going on. Later, plane come and we used to bring a X-ray outfit the same time, X-ray all the people. And anybody got lung disease or whatever inside his body, and they take them out and cure them. Some don't come back, but a lot of people come back after they're cured. And everything going on like that later. When we lived there on the north part, Hudson Bay, an old man used to live there. His name was Adam Gladjo. He was a hard-working old guy. Always had lots of dogs. He had sons, all trapping, and himself, they trap way north. So you have to look after his dogs all summer to get them in good shape. And one day he told me he went out setting a net. The big point I'm talking about, out from there is 50, 60 feet deep. That's where you want to set a net. Because the water was very warm and fish won't caught on the shore. So he made two straps out of moose hide, cut them around with the scissors big enough they won't break. He didn't have no running lines or anchor lines like today. You can buy them, but them days you couldn't buy them. So he made two of these long straps, probably 65, 70 feet long. And he cut himself a little spruce, dry spruce, not tall, with the branches on. And some of these little spruce, you know, branches look, they're pretty thick. It's one of them he got. He loaded that one. So one side he just put a rock or an anchor. And he started to set his net with a little bit of wind. And when he finished setting his net, and he tied this strap, 65 feet or 70 feet, and he tied this spruce for an anchor. So he come home. Now he's got a net over there, and you can see that little spruce floating around there, just like a buoy. People didn't know enough to make buoys like today. Now I can make buoys in no time at all. Anyway, he couldn't go and see his net for about 3 nights. It was blowing and blowing and couldn't go out, so finally it quit blowing and he went to look for his net kind of early in the morning and kind of foggy morning. And he paddle on the shore till he gets to that big point, and from there he depend on straight across down there where the winter trail used to go up. You can see little spruce and things there. That's the road used to go to Peerless Lake and Trout Lake, that country. So he had his net about there. And he started to go from there straight out to where he figured he couldn't hardly see across the lake. And the fog started to quieten down some. He looked for his net, he can't find it. Finally, he looked north down. Now you can see a porcupine swimming, but farther down, a couple of miles down, and he never had his net over there. Finally, circles, no sign, and finally he thought, I'll go and see that porcupine. He seems like in the same place, what he's doing there, staying, hang on, same place. So he kind of paddled his big canoe over there, and by God, when he come close, he recognized that's his own buoy he had there for to see. That was it. So he thought my net and must be moving farther north. So he got the tree and let the tree drift it away and started to pull that rope, but the good thing he kind of take the water off, you know, with his hand, you can do that. And keep on loading that strap and loading that strap and loading that strap. And he come to even to that point, it's about 2 miles. That strap stretch about 2 miles, and he was surprised. So he pulled his net up and let the rock go down and pull the net, and he fish he caught some rotten, he throw them away, and he just to keep the good fish because he couldn't load it all. And he had too much strap already. And then he started to pull the other strap. The other strap was stretched quite a bit too, but not that bad, not like the one with the buoy. And when he landed at his place there, he unloaded all the fish and he took this, he always had a fence there not far. He went to hang his saganapi, you would call that, but the white man would understand it, a strap made out of moose hide, and they stretch like hell, you know. So he started to hang that strap in there on the fence, and real hot day that day, and next day was real hot day, never pay attention to go and look at it. Finally, a couple of guys come and visit him there, and he told him his strap was 2 miles long. When he pulled it in, he had a hell of a time to load it. Those guys laughed at him. They didn't believe him, and he said, I'll prove it. He took him over there. I got when he got there, still the strap was 75 feet long, and the old man was sure disappointed. See, the strap started to get dry, and they shrink again, so everybody thought he was lying. My name is Joe Logan. My nickname is Loli. I was raised in Wabasca. I born in Chipoyan Lake. But my real home now is in Calling Lake. I live behind the school less than half a mile. I'm telling this story about the old Wabasca. But first I'll start in Gruard. My great-grandmother told me when I was very small fella, about 10, 12 years old, something between there. And the only store was, years ago, was Gruard. And when they all moved to Gruard to get groceries, whatever they're going to get, and somebody asked him, where are you moving to? Waskahigani. That means a house. See, years ago, the people was in a bush. They didn't make houses to live in the winter even. They make moose hide teepees, and that's where they live for the winter. Or else they made, just like a wigwam, nowadays we call it, They made it out of wood and put moss and muskeg and stuff in there between and put more wood on top. It was real warm. Cold winters, they moved into them and they lived there till start turn warm. So the first house they seen, they call it Waskahiganik. That was the real house. And she told us, when she used to tell us these stories, when they go there, there wasn't much flour. They get, most of the time, they get 3 scoops, fairly big scoops. And they bake that flour, they eat it. But after they left, they had no flour. So they live in a bush, more wild meat, moose meat, whatever they can get, they eat that. And I asked her, I said, what did you do when you short of tea, you short of milk, you short of sugar? Oh, she told us she didn't care. They didn't care for them. When they got no tea or anything, they drink the soup or half where they boil. See, they had no stoves to roast things with onions and the best things, lots of peppers. They boil stuff, they chew that, and they drink the soup, and they live, they pull through. Now, if we live like that, we'll die probably in a week. And next thing, that was a great Hudson Bay store there. Next thing, the Hudson Bay moved into Abascal. They built a great store there. The Indians used to call it Kichatawgam. That sounds like the great store, the head store. Hudson Bay moved there. They brought everything. Then people were better off. They get pretty well anything, then they can get quite a lot of flour, but I guess they never care much for flour. Even my great-grandmother, my mother used to keep her grandmother 2 dimes at our place for a week or two like that. She never really much eat bread or bannock or whatever. She wouldn't eat bread at all. She'd rather get my mother to bake bannock and eat bannock, but she never eat much. Maybe 2 inches square, that's about all she'll chew. And Ravions, see Hudson Bay when they moved to Abascal, they come from England. And Ravions come to Abascal. They built not far, about 400 yards. And they built a store there too. And the Indians used to call the Ravions Opamachawisak later, but first they call them French store, Frenchman's store. See, Ravions come from France. That's why they call them French store, Frenchman's store. And then they always fight, Hudson Bay and Ravions fight. Who's going to have the best customers? Who's going to buy more fur? Finally, Ravions bought dog team, the best dog team Indians had. They bought the best dog team. Then they started to travel. Go to lake, wherever the Indian people stay for the winter trapping. They go there, they take groceries, they take clothes, they take blankets, they take saddles, tobacco, everything like that. And then they call them Opamachawisak, that means traveling salesmen. Then Hudson Bay have to buy dogs. Then Hudson Bay got a man to send them. Same place, who can get there first, because that lake, it could be Hudson Bay customers there. So Hudson Bay send their paddling salesman to go and buy there. Who gets there first, buy the fur, because people might be real short of stuff. Even Hudson Bay customers still buy a little bit off Ravions. And if it's only Ravions customers in that lake, still they'll buy some from Hudson Bay. So I guess they had trouble even in a bush back there. I understand they had to fight a little bit between the mountains house and core like hell over it. And then next thing, Father Dimery come to Abascal. Then he built a small place, it's a convent, And I'll also, I guess that at the convent first where they start to put churches on Sundays so people can go to church. And then he built a church, a small church also. And later they moved nuns, three nuns, and a brother. And later they start the kids. They had six kids, six girls to start with. My mother used to tell us when she remember, I guess she was about 2 years old or three, something like that. She was very young when they take her, because her mother married another man and this other man never cared for much for this girl, so the girl have to go to convent. That's my mother and five others. My mother told us when she can remember, they were so poor in there. They use one wool blanket under, and on top a heavy gunny sack bags used to be, but you can buy that in rolls, and they sew it together, and that's what they use blanket on top. But they keep warm. And the brother, that's the one who was doing the work, getting the wood and building fires. Also, he set a net in the lake and catch the fish for the kids to eat. One day, brother went out in the lake, overflow, very cold, no rubbers, no rubber boots. Look at the net. And his feet got wet, just moccasins. I suppose he got quite a few socks inside the moccasins, but still he froze his toes. I seen that brother. He was very old when I seen him. His toes were all froze off. Brother Bian, that was his name. Bian, that must be his last name. And Father Dimery, he's the one started there. And I don't remember that. This is by all I was asked. I used to be kind of buggered to ask around, and that's how I find out lots of things. And far as back I remember, I used to like to know everything. I ask everything. But that helps me, that this is what story I'm making right now. That's going to help me lots. My mother used to hate to see me listening to man talking or like that, because sometimes man, you know, they talk about something not right, and my mother used to tell me that, keep out of there, don't listen to them man, they're swearing maybe, and but still I snake and listen. And if my dad sat with a man there talking with them and laughing along, right, he'll chase me out of there, go back in the house, we got no business here. And but still I'll go sneak around and kind of listen. But I learned lots out of there. And finally, English church come on the North Wabascow. See, Catholic church started on the south of Wabascow. That's why they call that lake, the post office over there, Demery. That's where they come from, because the priest, they were the one even first post office over there. Then the North Wabascow, that's where the English church started. They come from England. And they help lots. They help the people very much. Because the English church, they keep lots of kids there too. And the English church, they had good teachers there. Because English teachers, they taught pure English. I know a lot of people grow up there and they talk very good English, very good education, because that's pure English. But the old times, the nuns, when they come to Wabascow, they talk some English, but not much, mostly French. And their schools wasn't much of a schools, but kids talk English anyway. Like my mother and the first girls were there, they used to talk quite a lot of French. They understand a lot. Like my mother, she used to talk French. She used to understand quite a lot. And I never like French language myself. I tell her, I said, I don't want you taught me no French, but I'm sorry lots of times. Be nice. But I told her, I said, taught me English much as you can, I'm happy. And my mother talk French, talk English, she writes good. She was there till she was 16. Them days, when kids are 16, they let them go home and take the other ones. Later, they had lots of kids in the Catholic Church. And in the English church, they didn't keep that many kids, maybe 20 kids, some around 20, could be more. They never had big church over there. But the English church, they also had a man there come from England. His name is George Arnold. And when he first come there, he worked for the English church, looking after the horses, because there was just a preacher in there to start with. They don't have brothers. So George Arnold worked for there, and people, the Indian people, used to call him Otatosku. That means he's a worker there. He look after the horses and look after the cows, and they have chickens. He look after the chickens, feeding them. And he hauls wood and hay, but he never done it himself. He waits till the kids finish the school, big boys, and help him. He was kind of lazy man. He wasn't strong man either. And I remember around 1924, something like that, my uncle Ben Olsey was about 16, and my brother 13, 14, Harry, he died. He's old, way older than me, about 7 years. They used to come home and argue and just about fight when they get home. You know, you want to lesson longer, and radio, the Indian people call it kanduktamik. That means you listen, you heard music and things there, or whatever, you know. George Arnold had a radio. You just put it on your ears. You're the only one he listened. The other people sitting there, they don't hear nothing. And there's so many go there at night. Lots of people had trouble from there, just about fight over there, who want to listen next and the other one want to listen longer, and they get mad at each other, you know, for that. Anyway. When I, the first preacher, I don't know if that was the first preacher that comes with the English church, but the first preacher I remember, his name is Mr. White, very, very skinny man, pale, looks awful sick, out of weight, used to go house to house and preach the people, trying to help much as he can, trying to get the people to change into the English church from Catholic church. And the next thing I remember, there was two white girls come from England, English girls. One of them, her name was Miss Master, and the other girl, her name was Miss Moxon. Those girls were nurses. And I remember when they first come, they come house to house, trying to know the people. They come to our place. They had a person from Wabascow, talks good English, good Cree, went with them house to house to interpret for them. And somebody's sick. They gave him medicine, white medicine. If you got a scab, they give you something to rub there to heal and all that. And they were very, very helpful for the people, but they were so nice too. And I remember later I listened to people talking. I was fairly big already. They were surprised to be a white woman, Moniaskuok, to be medicine people. Just like medicine man, but they were girls. See, the Indian people, they call medicine man, it was a man. But still also a lot of women know a lot of roots and to cure people them days. But they never call them medicine woman or whatever. All they'll say, that one can make you something to help you. But the man, they call him medicine man. And later, I got a sister about 7 years younger than me. She born. And those two nurses, they come and help my mother till my sister born. Her name is Rose. She grew up. She still lives today. Lives at Calling Lake. She had 13 kids, 7 boys, 6 girls. They're all alive. Never lost one. She's been lucky. And next thing I remember, later, way later, the South Church, Catholic Church, they had nurses there too, to try and help people. And when I started to grow up, I was 12, 13, doctor used to come once a year in the winter time, and then doctor will come 3 time too in the summer time. Like when I was about 12, 13, planes started to come, landed there, and Indian agent come there, policeman, and doctor will come. And later they start to give x-rays in the country, and people see if they're sick. And from there, next, I'll start this, about the Great Hudson Bay. They had another store. Hudson Bay built another store in Chipewyan Lake. Chipewyan Lake is about 120 miles from Wabascow at that time. You have to float down the river. Wabascow River starts it from the north of Wabascow. It's a big, fairly big river. You have to float down that river. Then you barge it over there 12 miles to get to Chipewyan Lake. Chipewyan Lake is just a small lake. And Hudson Bay had a store there. Also Ravions. And then down there they had dog teams too. I remember my dad used to work for the Hudson Bay. My father's name was Bob Logan. And enough he learned about how to buy fur, and you got to be a good man to understand the fur, because you can buy awful poor fur for big money. And them days, silver fox is around $300 most of the time, and red fox wasn't much, 20, 25, about the highest they ever went. And the black fox were up to $700, and I guess lynx one time, they were very good money too, and beavers sometimes very big money. If a person don't know how to buy fur, he can really make Hudson be lost. And my father went over there, and there was 4 big dogs, they're black dogs, he used to talk about lots, and I seen the picture of them dogs. And the leader was a very nervous dog, and bite my father on the arm. And my dad, I guess, beat the hell out of the dog, but after he was okay. Anyway, my dad over there, he buy for quite a few years. That's where I born, so. And from there, Hudson Bay had a store in Trout Lake, where the Trout River started into come to Wabascow River. But between the Trout Lake and a little bit another lake there, they call it Mariah Lake, and that's where the Hudson Bay store started years ago. And when Ravions moved down there, they passed the Hudson Bay. They go and start a store at Long Lake. They passed Perilous Lake and Trout Lake, still on the north side. Long Lake is not a big lake, 4 or 5 miles long. And on the east end, that's where they started. So Hudson Bay quit the Hudson Bay store at the south side of Trout Lake. They move over there too. So today they still call Old Post there, where the Hudson Bay started. That's where church, Catholic church is now, and schools there too. A lot of kids going to that school, and still quite a few people alive They were there for years ago, like Paul Powder and Harry Hole and a few of them guys. Anyway, so they were over there, north side of Perilous, north side of Trout Lake. They were not far apart, they're about 300 yards. They were always pretty close apart, so they watch each other, not take my customer and the other one not take the other one's customer. And finally, they keep it up like that for a long time. Finally, Hudson Bay bought Ravions out. I remember that then. I was about 15. First I can remember back, a guy used to be in Ravion's store there in Wabascow. His name was Hunter, last name. I don't remember his first name. He was in Ravion's there for a long time, good many years. When Hunter moved from there, next thing I know, he was south Athabasca, about 10 miles, 12 miles. Him and another guy started a store there, I come to find out later. And then when Hunter moved from Ravion's, Wabascow, Brown moved there. Brown looked after that store good many years. My father's friend, he used to be really friends. And one fall, Brown had to move from there. He wasn't fired, I guess, but he was just moved. Another big Irish fella come in there. He was a policeman for 15 years, tough and strong. They sent that one. So Mr. Bowers was there, this Irishman, all winter. And the Hudson Bay and Ravions, they used to give out a lot of credit. Stake the trappers, their own customers. Bowers stake a lot of people, but he trying to collect all winter, not much credit. Holds back much as he can. And he didn't give out too much, and he wants people to pay up every time they come, bringing any fur. They want them to pay up much as they can. And by spring, people didn't know that much, and trappers come in, they pay up, and Bowers keep on telling them, no credit for a while. And people pay up and pay up, and the people that didn't catch many rats, there were no beavers to mount or anything them days, and they pay up most of it. Finally, Bowers won't give nothing completely. They shut down. About the end of June, something like that, they close up the store. And all over, same thing. Chipoyan, Perilous Lake over there, same thing. I guess it was all over the same thing. Hudson Bay bought them out. And a lot of them trappers were dealing with Ravions. Oh boy, that they were ever hard up that summer. I'll tell you that. Even as we used to make lime in the summertime, and we usually make lime twice a summer, you know, in the spring and in the fall. And a lot of them people bring in wood there for us to buy, but we didn't have much anything to buy. Well, we take some and give them some lot stuff we can get. We used to sell this lime to Hudson Bay and Ravion's Catholic Church and English Church, and people buy some, rangers buy some, anybody can afford. It was $2 a bag, that's what we sell for. But burning lime, it's not easy work, you know. It takes 7 or 8 nights. If you got good wood, you can burn it in 7 nights, but if you got poor wood, it won't done. You have to keep on building more fire, more nights. Burning lime was a funny thing. You build a hole where it's fairly high bank, make it real big in the top, and you make it smaller down below. Then from the lakeside, you punch a hole there, and you put iron across where you lay your rocks, lime rocks. There's a lot of lime rocks in Wabasca. We don't have very many here lime rocks, very few, a little bit small ones, not big ones like Wabasca. Then when we used to burn this lime, once in a while we used to take quite a few sand rocks, you know, there's smooth on top, more white. We used to throw them in there just to look at them when they burned. For about 3-4 nights, when we burned lime on top, the flame was real red. And later, blue flame, later the flame started to come down, not very high. Then the blue flame started to circle there, just like silk. Beautifulest thing you ever seen with your eyes. And the longer the flame is getting bluer all over, fairly early in the flame, maybe 2-3 inches over the top part, it's all light blue, beautifulest thing you ever seen. And finally, you know the lime is burned, finished. Then you put it out. You clean your fire hole over there, throw the ashes away, let it cool off for a couple of nights, but you got to watch there's no rain or anything. You put up a tent on top or something. And we, by that time, we used to build a big floor, put a big tent over it, and that's where we haul all these rocks, put them in that platform, let them stay there for a week or two. Then you start to shovel your lime, that's what they call hot lime. Then we bag it and sell it for $2 a bag. Everybody buys it, we use some ourselves. See, years ago, you plaster your log houses, that's all the houses we live in there. Then it's all cracked up. Then you whitewash with this hot lime, you fill all the cracks, that's just like insulation. The way we use it, and also your house looks kind of new. You can see it from distance away. People can see it; they won't laugh at it. The people won't whitewash their house. They can't buy lime. It looks kind of uglier, you know. Even house wasn't that beautiful. Anyway, people were so hard up. If she had somebody, they won't give them credit. Some best trappers Rabbi owns had, well, Hudson Bay, they'll give him some stuff, but not much. But the poor trappers, oh my God, even lots of them have to move away to go and look for something to live on, or back in the bush. Then Hudson Bay bought for by themselves after that. Yeah, the Hudson Bay themselves, and even one time years ago, Rabbions at Hudson Bay, they were rich enough. And there's a lot of Jewish buyers, small buyers, and different kind of buyers. They were in Wabasca, buying fur, cash. And I got Hudson Bay raised rats up to $5. And, there's a lot of little buyers. Even some people won't sell their fur right away. They figure the rat might go up yet. And by God, all at once, they knock it down to $2 a rat. And a lot of them Jewish people, they went broke flat over there. Even some of them were crying. Don't know what to do next. And from that, somebody sold all the dogs. They don't keep no more dogs because they don't have to peddle in a bush, the trappers still come to them. They'll call it. See, the Hudson Bay, where they had a store, they call it Hudson Bay Post. That's why that old post's still there. Years ago, I stopped there once when I was 17. Helping two nights to my cousin there, hanging fish. In the fall, whitefish used to spawn from Trout Lake into Maria Lake there. And they make a little houses where they hang their fish. They build that house so high, and then they put poles across, and they got these fish tend to a pole, and they hang them in there. When that bottom part full, they build another house so high, enough the whitefish won't reach the other fish, and they hang again in there like that all the way. And pretty well everybody lives there, he hangs his own fish, bunch of them fish. I bought some fish in there when I was about 18 years old then, for five sticks for a dollar. That's 20 cents a stick, and there's 10 fish in there. And those fish were from a pound and a half to 2 pounders, and they were whitefish. And those people in old post there, boy, they had good dog team all winter, all fat, and they eat this fish and they sell fish. They make quite a lot of living from there. And now, I'll go back about this treaty Indians and half-breeds. Years ago, there was no such a thing, different kind of Indians in Wabascow country, well, also Chipoyan. They were all same Indians, only thing half-breeds. They were part white and looked like a white man, some of them. Women looked like a white woman. And some people, they look black, they look more Indians, but they didn't know anything different. And one time, there was government people got there and started to talk to these people. And they also brought for a treaty Indian and a half-breed, they call it Scrip. And they brought interpreter also. And the interpreter drunk every night, interpret next day, and there was a lot of people talk good English in Wabascow, they could be interpreters instead bring an outsider. So this guy was half crazy, you know, he didn't talk too good of English. And anyway, interprets. So a lot of people, they were more white, they took the treaty. See, treaty, they promise you, long as the rivers are running and the sun runs, the same deal. But now today it's different deal. Treaties lost a lot of that. And treaties, they'll give you a reserve, they'll give you a land. And also they make four reserves there. There's one from Sandy Lake to Wabascow, south of Wabascow Lake, but it's on the east side. It come into part of Wabascow and part of Sandy, a big reserve. Another one, before you get to Catholic Church from Sandy there, there's another small reserve there. I don't know how big that one could be, 4 miles or 4 miles square or 6 miles square. It's a pretty big reserve. We used to live not far from there. And then another reserve north of Wabascow, but it's on the south end, east side from Hudson Bay. There's another small reserve there they made them days. Another fairly big reserve on the north side of Wabascow, where the mouth starts from the Wabascow Lake, joining into Peace River by Fort Vermilion. That's where they make another reserve by the part of Wabascow Lake and part of the river. A fairly big reserve there. So you take your choice. If you want to be a treaty Indian, you're promised you'll get ration, you'll get cells, free cells, you get free nets, you got free land, you can get a house built from the government to live in, good roof that it won't leak. And them days was Indian people had poor houses where whenever they built a house was leak because no roofing, good roofing. And if you want to take a scrip, you're a half-breed. But if you get into treaty, you're a pure Indian. And a lot of them people, they weren't pure Indian. Like Holst there, Andrew Hall and what do you call this other one? Maybe I'll remember. They join in there. Quite a few people like that. And some Indians, they're black, don't look any half breed. They took scrip. And this scrip supposed to worth $20,000. But who knows $20,000 them days? It sounds big. They know $100 or $300 probably. They didn't know more than $1,000. Some people handle quite a lot of money when they sold a bunch of fur. So they took scrip. And they sell that scrip. Some people bought scrip. They were smarter. The white people got rich on it, I guess. But the people got scrip and sold it. They were lucky to get $100. My great-grandmother told us, she went to the store, take her scrip, and sold it. She took a little bit of clothes for a dress or something and socks, a little bit of groceries. And there was a set of dishes there, Chinese-ware dishes. Chinese-ware dishes were very light, you know. You couldn't use them in the campfire. But she got her eyes on it. She liked to get it. There was six cups, six saucers, six plates, and a milk jug, a little milk jug, and sugar bowl. I don't know what they want milk jug for. She never drinks milk. She didn't like it. And she asked the guy serving her there, can I get this for my scrip? And the guy went to see the head boss, and the head boss said, yeah, give her, but not, she tell her she don't have that much left, but we'll give it to her. And this guy talked, he told my grandmother, your scrip not that big, but the boss said you can have it. They screw her, she didn't know, and she was so happy. She took it to the campfire and by the teepee there, and her brother walked in there and had a bunch of tea in a little pot, and the last tea was more leaves, tea leaves. And her brother put this tea in there with leaves. After her brother drinks this tea, and there was a lot of leaves in there, and she was going to shake the leaves off into the campfire, and some rocks in there. He broke the handle, and the cup busted all in pieces, and my great-grandmother said, he feels so bad, you know, for her cup busted. Anyway, this interpreter didn't do right. Like this chief, Big Stone. That's why they call Big Stone Band, this reserves in Wabasca. Also, this one, Calling Lake, belongs to that same reserves. And this Big Stone, they called him that time, that treaty there. And his brother was a counselor. His brother used to laugh lots of fun to that old man. I remember seeing him. And I guess this old man used to call him Kakagis, when he was young, kid, used to laugh lots. And Kakagis, that means a raven. And two more brothers from there, William Young and Peter, Philip Young. See, four of them brothers, Big Stone and Crow, and William Young, and Philip, they're four brothers. But the interpreter didn't do right there. He called the chief there, the one took the chief. His name was Young. And the other one laughed like Raven. He's Young too, that's his last name. But the interpreter called this one Big Stone. And the other one he called him Crow. And Crow is not even Magpie. Magpie might sound good, but they're supposed to have last name is Young. So William, he was Young. And then Philip, they call him Young. And their four brothers, just the interpreters didn't call him. Interpret right. like the North Reserve there, the Little Reserve. Well, I know there was one guy there, his name was Johnny Cat, and the other one is Bear, and they're full brothers too. Just because the other people call him Bear and Cat, and just for nicknames, and that's what they give him. See, the reason this Big Stone, the chief there, he was one of the best pilots in Athabasca River from Athabasca. And one day they flowed down and they fell off the boat, kind of doing funny things. He was a very happy person, and I guess he was just joking and laughing in the boat and let the paddle go. It wasn't swift anyway, and the paddle hit the rock and hit him and knocked him off the boat, and the water was very cold already. So he swam into a big rock there and climbed in there, and so they have to bring the boat back and pick up the chief, the pilot. And they used to call him Stesney Big Rock after that, and that's what he gave him in that. And it wasn't fair. And I'll talk about this Athabasca now. See, a lot of people like to know Athabasca, why they call it Athabasca Landing. Some guys trying to give out the name, why Athabasca Landing for. Athabasca Landing, see, there was only a road come from Edmonton to Athabasca. Years ago, they hauled freight, and they hauled freight with horses from from Edmonton to Athabasca, and they unload in Athabasca. They even had the steers bringing freight from Edmonton. They used to call these oxen, and they also unload in Athabasca, landing the freight in Athabasca. When a train come to Athabasca, the track was the end of the track in Athabasca. Still today it's the end of the track there. And whatever it's sent from Edmonton, it's unloaded in Athabasca, Athabasca Landing. They landed there. And one time, there was a steamer in Athabasca. They built a steamer there someplace. I don't know if they built it in Athabasca or wherever, but there was a steamboat. And this steamboat used to load in Athabasca there. And from there, he hauled that freight up to Athabasca River and go up to Slave River and Slave Lake to West End. That's where the Hudson Bay had this in Gruard. He'd go and unload there and come back to Athabasca and load up again and take some more freight. And that's why they call Athabasca Landing. They all land there. And those skiffs used to go down the river from Athabasca. They can only go to Fort Smith. From there, there's a big steamers go from north side of Fort Smith from there to the sea. See, by Fort Smith there's so many rapids. You can't go around at 16, 18, 20 miles, whatever it is, all rapids. If a boat goes there, it'll be smashed up to nothing. So that's far those skiffs goes from Athabasca. And when those boats come back, they always got a bunch of man to pull the boat up, skiff, what they call it. Those skiffs were big, around 40 feet, maybe some longer, some shorter. I see this rope, what they used to pull these boats up. Hudson Bay used to sell it in big rolls, a very long rope. It was more like something like nylon, but it was really tight rope and not supposed to rot from the water. I don't know what they'd make out of. I don't even know what they call it. See, the other one, it's the rope was more like hay was made out of. It's not that one, it's different. And it's a one long piece of rope, and there's one so far, a branch from there, and a branch, and a branch. So many men pull the skiffs up.